speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome on this Monday, December 10th, 2018. I'm David Knight. Well, over the weekend, we had some genuine man-made warming in Paris as they lit fire to the city. And it is not just the confiscatory taxes trying to confiscate private transportation. Remember, before the new taxes of Macron, they were already paying over $7 a gallon for gasoline, and over 60% of that was taxes. And then he jumped it up by another huge amount. But of course, that was only half of what the UN is ultimately demanding. Now, one of the biggest issues of this last weekend's violence, I think, was the escalation in terms of the military response. We had Macron pulling up tanks, some of which had EU insignias on them. There's his European army that he was begging to have. And I said when he was talking about it, and talking about how nationalism and patriotism were treason, that he was going to be using that European army on his citizens. Well, it didn't take very long. He doesn't have much of a European army, but what he does have, he'll use against his citizens right now. And it's not just the fuel issue. Some of the signs there were talking about the UN migrant treaty that was just signed in Marrakesh, Morocco, today. And they were saying no to that as well. It's these two issues coming together. The commonality between them is the desire to take away sovereignty and to control the people and to take down its economy. And quite frankly, folks, when I talked on Friday about the USMCA, I said, why MCA? Why do we need that? We had the old village people music just to get your attention. Something like that that's really annoying will grab your attention. Why MCA? You got to stay in the YMCA. That was the lyrics of the old village people thing. And so why do we have to stay in an agreement with Mexico and Canada? It is nothing but a sovereignty-destroying agreement like the European Union. And as we see Brexit and the British people trying to struggle years after their election, where they said we don't want to be under their thumb anymore. We don't want them regulating our economy. We don't want them importing people into our country as well. These are the two twin aspects of it. And of course, they all pull back to a desire for globalism. They're all excused by climate change. That's the global problem that is the rationale for everything that they do, including global taxes. We want to have a global government, global taxes to solve this global problem that they have invented. So at the same time, we have the migrant treaty being finalized in Marrakesh, Morocco. We also have the globalist meeting in Poland for a massive climate treaty. These are the UN conspiracies that are being used to destroy our country. And yet, as we look at this USMCA, President Trump, who has pushed back against so many different aspects of these things, it's just amazing to me when I saw him come out with this, NAFTA 2.0 in reality. President Trump, who understands that it's very difficult to do a reasonable trade deal when you've got three different partners or more, these multilateral trade agreements. He always talks about bilateral trade agreements. He's not anti-trade. He is against these complicated, sovereignty-destroying agreements. And yet, he's pushing this very hard. Hopefully, we can stop this in the Senate and not have it ratified. Because, as we pointed out, there are buried in this UN Agenda 2030 climate issues mandated. We have the transgender agenda mandated. We have encouragement and amnesty for giant corporations to destroy our free speech in that agreement. And, of course, it maintains this supranational organization, which will be sovereignty destroying regardless of what the details are. We're selling out our birthright heritage for a bowl of porridge or milk.
In a world of deceit, Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome on this Monday, December the 10th, 2018. As we see a state of emergency, a historic winter storm pounding the mid-Atlantic area, the southeast. I know in Raleigh, they had predicted, I think, 2 inches, and they got 20 inches. Everything has come to a halt. Because, of course, they don't typically get that much snow. They don't have a lot of snow removal equipment. People aren't experienced driving in that. I know from living in that area, everything comes to a halt. But quite a bit more than they'd expected, which brings to mind the question as to why do we believe these people's weather predictions, climate change, decades, projected decades out in the future, when they can't even accurately predict the weather. And this is the difference. Years ago, I went to the American Meteorological Society's meeting here, the AMS, here in Austin, and there were hundreds of research papers being presented, a lot of formal discussions, a lot of more informal presentations out on the floor. Everybody is creating models. Then they test them against expectation. They try to predict what's going to happen 2 or 3 days in advance in terms of weather. And then they test what they measure against their predictions and then try to fine-tune their models. And that's what these hundreds of scientists were doing throughout the convention, the AMS. And there was only one exhibit there, funded by a Soros group. And they were trying to lobby the weather forecasters to push for climate change. They said the weathermen on television, the broadcasters, have a tremendous influence over the public. And yet only about 10% of them at the time, believed in climate change, man-made climate change. They said, we've got to change this. And you people need to wake up. They would not engage us in conversation, obviously. They didn't want to debate the issue. They wanted to silence us. They wanted to use weathermen for propaganda. And so as this is happening, we're seeing the climate change agenda going on in Poland. President Trump, it's not just the Polish people who are trolling the climate globalists that are there. Of course, this is the heart of coal country, and Poland is the heart of coal for the entire European Union. They have more people there. By far, the vast majority of coal production is coming out of Poland. And so they go to the country that produces the most coal. They go to the city in the region that produces the most coal to hold these climate conferences. And they've done it now, the third time they've done this. And so this time, not to be intimidated by these globalists coming in, they push back. They set up all these coal exhibits and everything. As I reported on it last week, I talked to Mark Moreno, Climate Depot, I said, they're kind of like they're rolling coal on these globalists, you know, which is what a lot of guys do that just get fed up with all this environmental regulation. What they do is they go to the nth degree, they take their diesel trucks, they remove all the filters and cleaning devices there, and even set it up so it can dump massive amounts of fuel out. A very expensive way to protest, quite frankly, but they've got it set up so that if, they got a Prius behind them or something, that's tailgating them, they just flip on the lever and they dump out this massive cloud of black coal, which is basically what the Polish people are doing to the globalists at COP24. But it's not just them. President Trump has sent a delegation from our coal industry there. You don't have to roll coal. You can do it cleanly. You can have clean diesel trucks. I think when these people do that kind of protest, it's kind of counterproductive because you can have extremely clean diesel engines. And in spite of all the tens of billions of dollars worth of fines and imprisonment of Volkswagen executive, all the tens of billions of dollars they put against Volkswagen to intimidate them, to make them stop creating diesel engines, they were quite efficient, they were durable, and they were clean. And that's why they had to be shut down. And so when nobody dies, they come after them and with punitive, draconian measures, especially when compared to other things that have happened in the automotive industry, like the ongoing airbag disaster from Takata that's killed dozens of people. Oh, they don't get that kind of treatment. No, not at all. No executives going to jail, no tens of billions of dollars against them. And we've had car companies in the past make conscious decisions about withholding safety equipment or design flaws and say, well, it'd be cheaper to pay off the lawsuits. In the case of the Pinto, the Ford Pinto, be cheaper to pay off the lawsuits than to fix that. So let's just let people burn to death. Nobody went to jail. Nobody got billions of dollars in fines. This is about banning our transportation. So as these two things are happening simultaneously, as you do have man-made global warming because the people are burning down Paris in the streets, and I don't condone that, I think that is, again, counterproductive, just like the rolling coal demonstrations. Because what this does is, and I think it's being co-opted by anarchists left and right, but they have legitimate beefs against this, and they should protest this legitimately, peacefully, without burning cars. I mean, if you're complaining about your car transportation being burned, you don't burn the cars. This is what happens with the Black Lives Matter people. They don't want to fix the situation. They want to take a bad situation, an irritant, and they want to exacerbate it. And so they come in and they burn down their the black businesses after you have a black individual that has been brutalized by the police or something, instead of trying to fix the way the police interact with people. And so the same thing is happening now in Paris. They're going in and they're exacerbating this problem. Why? Because they simply want to destroy society. And folks, what the globalists want to do is really the same thing. This is the common man's way of doing what Angela Merkel and Emmanuel Macron are doing to us. They are literally burning down our countries. And they're doing it with this climate change agenda. They're doing it with their migration agenda. And both of these things are being pushed right now with UN agreements that are nothing but conspiracies to destroy our sovereignty and our countries. I just want to, before we get back into this in more detail, I talked on Friday, of course, was the anniversary of Pearl Harbor. It was the 77th anniversary of Pearl Harbor. I talked about how George Bush didn't blame the Japanese. He blamed the America First people. He said those isolationists out there who didn't want to get us into another useless war like World War One. And of course, he disagreed with Winston Churchill, who said, if you Americans hadn't gotten into World War One, it wouldn't have gone on for several more years. It would have ended in 1917. We wouldn't have had the Bolsheviks taking over in the communists taking over. We wouldn't have had Stalin in power in Russia. We wouldn't have had the Nazis built up because of the aftermath of this in Germany. Wouldn't have even had a fascist Italy. But you guys prolonged it. And we had these unintended consequences. But George H.W. Bush said, no, it was the isolationist who caused Pearl Harbor, even going so far as to say that it was the America First people who were demonstrating at the same time that this attack happened. Well, they didn't know that it was going to be happening, first of all. But he said they were flying escort to the Japanese bombers. George H.W. Bush never blamed the Japanese. As a matter of fact, he was giving them olive wreaths. He wasn't saying this is a lesson about imperialism, because he was pushing imperialism himself. And he wasn't going to blame the Japanese because he said, we are a Pacific power and we must produce what they described. He didn't give it the name, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, but that was what he was pushing, because he tied isolationism in, which he said was the cause of World War II. It was isolation, not the Nazis, not the Japanese Empire, but America First. Putting America's interests first. And of course, he never did that himself. And so I mention all that because this is all fading. This last ceremony that we had was the first time they've had no survivors from Pearl Harbor in attendance. Five were still alive from the USS Arizona, but they were not able to attend. And they just were able to identify the remains of hundreds of sailors who had previously been unable to be identified until we had DNA testing. So if we forget our history, we will repeat it. And let us not forget. 5,000 arrested in Paris as part of the Yellow Vest protest that went on for a fourth weekend. This weekend, we had pretty much everything in Paris. Just before Christmas, all the Christmas shopping was shut down. The major shopping areas inside of Paris, as well as tourist attractions. But as all this was happening, the one thing that you could not see was Emmanuel Macron, remaining completely out of sight, completely invisible. But you could see his army on the streets. Over 8,000 troops in Paris. There were 89,000 across France, because this is not limited to Paris. We talk about Paris, but it was all across the country and has been from the very first day they had protests. The very first weekend that they had protests, I came in on that Monday about a month ago, said, look at the flags everywhere that they had protests. 2,000 flags. They had them marked on the map in yellow because, again, the yellow vest, that's what they are mandated to have, hazard vests with them in their cars. And it's like, well, you can take away my car. I'm a motorist. So they are protesting the confiscatory taxes that are being driven by the UN climate change agenda. And so across France, they had 89,000 troops out. But in Paris alone, it was 8,000. And this is what they saw. They saw tanks coming in. An EU army that he was talking about having. Yeah, he was going to use it against his own citizens to keep them in the European Union, to keep this agenda going. And as you see these tanks coming in against the people who are, in his words, traitors, because they want France and they are patriotic. They want to defend their homes and their lives. That makes them traitors, traitors to the EU. And they came in not with French colors, but they came in with the EU flag painted on the side there. And so that's what people are looking at. As one person tweeted out, so now we have combat-ready armored vehicles with an EU flag being used against unarmed European protesters who are demonstrating against EU authoritarianism. That's right. They're protesting not so much, you know, Macron is a little Rothschild EU puppet for the globalists. And so ultimately they are protesting the EU. So it makes perfectly good sense that they would have their European army, such as it is at the moment, come in to come after them. And the person said, do you still think that the EU is, quote, a project for peace, unquote? Remember, it was just a few weeks ago that we had Macron saying, I believe in the project of a sovereign Europe, not a sovereign France, a sovereign Europe. And he said, we have to protect ourselves with respect to China, Russia, and even the United States of America. But of course, I said at the time, he's going to be using that against his own people. Because that's who his real enemy is at the moment. They have to destroy France. They have to destroy Germany. They have to destroy Italy. All the European countries must be destroyed and subsumed into this gray, monolithic New World Order. That begins with Europe. And then, of course, Europe will be joined with the North American Union, which is where President Trump is failing the worst. Yeah, he's basically trolling the French and saying, looks like they agree with me. They don't want higher taxes. Looks like they agree with me. They don't believe your Paris Climate Accord. And yet President Trump is putting the Paris Climate Agenda, the UN agenda, this climate agenda, he is putting that in the USMCA. He may not be aware of it. I don't think he is. Because just like the transgender issue, you know, he had his Health and Human Services department under Alex Azar, say we're going to define sex as biological. We must do that. It doesn't make any sense. It's absolute chaos and disorder, which is what the people want, if you don't have that. But of course, Twitter, the rest of these people are pushing the idea that, it's hateful to say, as they've banned feminists, it's hateful to say that men are not women. You can't say that. They can be women if they want to. So shut up. We're not going to let that happen. Well, President Trump said we're going to define this as biological, and yet the agreement that he's putting together, this USMCA, says exactly the opposite. And it also encourages and rewards and indemnifies, gives them immunity to censor the internet billionaires that are censoring speech. It creates, going back again, I'll review this real quickly. Zbigniew Brzezinski talking about how there was going to be a technocratic elite, how they were going to establish world government in a trilateral pattern. They were going to create regional blocks. They were going to have a North American Union. They're going to have a unification of Asia, a unification of Europe. It would begin by doing economic unification, and then they would move to political unification gradually throughout all that. And then once they got these three different areas, they could unify them very easily into a world government because you had wiped out the countries that used to exist. And that really is the plan. And it continues and manifests itself in these multinational trade agreements. That's where it begins. And that's why NAFTA needed to go. It isn't that it's just a bad deal. It was a horrible deal. A horrible deal from the standpoint of economics. And getting some trade concessions from Canada for cars and milk, but leaving the sovereignty-destroying agreement in place is as foolish as anything that's been done since the day of Esau. Trading his birthright for a bowl of porridge, and that's what we've done. Except we've traded it for a couple of cars and a bowl of milk. And it's insane. And President Trump, I don't think, understands what's in this agreement that he continues to push. Because it's antithetical to things that he's done at the federal level. And yet, everything that he does at the federal level will be undone by this multinational agreement that he is championing here. So he can see it happening in France. He can see it happening in Washington, but he can't see it happening in the North American Union. He doesn't understand that. Otherwise, why would he be pushing this? There is a chance to stop this. It's not going to be coming. We're not going to stop it with President Trump. We're going to have to use other people to do it. There are a lot of Republicans and Democrats who, for whatever reason, don't like this agreement. And they may not agree with us on the sovereignty issue, but they don't like it for other reasons. And we need to go with that and stop it, and to stop this agreement. So as we look at the French Revolution, it's also going on in Brussels. In Brussels, about 500 people also put on yellow vests, and they took place in demonstrations in Brussels near the European Parliament. It was surrounded by water cannons to defend the EU Parliament. In Holland, they also saw protesters take to the streets. In the Dutch city of Rotterdam, a few hundred protesters in the high-visibility vests had become a symbol of a movement that was walked peacefully across downtown Erasmus Bridge, singing a song about Netherlands and handing flowers to passersby. And they said this: "Our children are hardworking people, but they have to pay taxes everywhere. You can't get housing anymore. It's not going well in Dutch society. The social welfare net we grew up with is gone. The government is not there for the people. It is there to protect its own interests." And folks, where this manifests itself is in this migrant treaty that was signed today by most nations of the world today in Marrakesh. We'll talk about that when we come back.
Liberty, it's your move. This is the David Knight Show.
Well, we have a professor of French history at Cambridge University, Robert Toombs. He said these French protests are a warning to Europe over the widening gulf between rulers and the ruled. You know, between people like Arnold Schwarzenegger, as I pointed out last week, the guy just bought a Bentley, $250,000, but prior to that, he owned a Bugatti, $2.5 million. Even more conspicuous consumption of both wealth and fuel. And of course, he travels to all these climate change agendas and so conferences, COP24 that's going on right now in Poland. And he's there stirring up. There he is in his Bugatti. Leave the drawer open. All the paparazzi around there. Here I am, basically standing up in the car and posing for the picture. Here I am in my Bugatti. It's $2.5 million car. And see, people like Schwarzenegger, they'll be able to have multi-million-dollar cars that go 267 miles an hour, 0 to 60 in under 3 seconds. And you won't have anything but a bicycle, maybe. That's what they want for you in the future. You want to talk about the widening gulf between rulers and ruled, that's it right there, folks, in a nutshell. You won't be moving. You will be locked up in a city. That's what UN 2030 Agenda for Sustainability is all about. It's not about sustaining the environment. It's about sustaining their power and their lock on wealth and the economy. And so, as this professor is saying, every time there's been a major uprising, it has taken everybody by surprise. And he talks about how these types of movements that we're seeing now in France are going to be spreading across Europe. This is what we've seen in the past as well. And as President Trump trolled them over the weekend on Twitter, he said, "Very sad day and night in Paris. Maybe it's time to end the ridiculous and extremely expensive Paris Agreement." They call it the Paris Climate Accord. I said it's now become the Paris Climate Discord. Return the money back to the people in the form of lower taxes, he suggested. He said the Paris Agreement isn't working out so well for Paris. Protests and riots all over France. People do not want to pay large sums of money, much of it to third world countries that are questionably run, in order to maybe protect the environment. They're chanting, "We want Trump." "I love France," he said. Well, the French foreign minister was not very happy about this, of course. "We do not take domestic American politics into account, and we want that to be reciprocated. I say this to Donald Trump, and the French president says it too. Leave our nation be." Well, I say that to Macron. Leave our nation alone. You've messed up yours enough. Butt out. You and your globalist Republicans and Democrats can hit the road in your Bugattis and your private jets, because we're not buying the hypocrisy, and we're not going to let you control us. And of course, as I said, we've got people peacefully protesting in Holland as well as in Sweden. In Holland, as we were going to break, I said, you know, that they were saying our children work hard, they're paying taxes, but they can't get jobs. The social welfare net that we grew up with is now gone. Why is that? Well, higher taxes, you can thank people like Macron and the UN for that directly, but you can also thank them for why they can't get jobs and apartments because of the mass migration, also a UN agenda. But the government is not there for the people. It is there to protect its own interests. It is there to destroy the lives of the people, quite frankly. One of the reporters, mainstream reporters that was covering this, I think it was for AFP, I retweeted her tweet over the weekend, because I thought it was particularly poignant. She said, "Saddest thing I've heard today." She said, "I heard one 29-year-old man say he had lost his job. Things had shut down. He could no longer find a job." Why? Because you've got people being brought in to take away their jobs, being brought in, going on welfare, increasing the tax burden for other people. And then a couple who came up to her and said, you're married? You have children? We can't do that. We can't. How do you do that in America? You know, we can't plan more than a couple of months in advance here. We can't find the money to have a family. That's exactly why they're doing this. That's exactly why they planned this agenda. Really sad. And I'm sure that reporter didn't have any answers for them. I would have given them answers. These people are scratching their heads. How can this be? We had a social safety net here. We had a welfare state. We had socialism. In France, they embraced it very heavily. And they are now waking up to the fact that these European Union politics, these politicians, these globalist politicians, are trying to destroy their country. They've been had. Now they're personalizing it towards Macron. He ran as a socialist and so forth. And everybody said, how in the world can he fool the people into thinking that this Rothschild investment banker is a man of the people? He's a socialist and so forth. So they're looking at that and they're personalizing it, angry at him. I hope they can see the larger agenda, the UN agenda behind all this. It's bigger than Macron. It's bigger than the EU. It really is coming from the UN. And then in Sweden, the people that are protesting there are also doing it peacefully like they are in Holland. Same story. I am here for the poor elderly who paid tax their whole lives and are now forced to starve. Where did this all begin? I've told you many times about the UN agreement and treaty, the way they were pushing in the year 2000, 18 years ago. They said, you know, we've got collapsing demographics here. in Europe. We're going to have to bring in people from the third world in order to pay for your Social Security. You know, you're not having enough kids. Why? Because of the burden, the economic burden. It's happening here in America, too, just more slowly. And we're behind them. Remember back in the 1950s, you could have a father who was working a blue-collar job and a stay-at-home mom, and they had a better standard of living than we do today with two people working, both the mother and the father working. And we ship the kids off to kindergarten where they can have their transgender story time, drag queen story hour. That's what we've become. And now, instead of a 2% tax burden from the federal government, the typical family of four is more like 25 to 30%, which is about what a working mother makes because they're not totally dedicated in a two-parent family. They're not totally dedicated to a career. But if they are totally dedicated to a career, they ship their kids off to be raised by the government. And the agenda that the government has is nothing short of satanic. And so this is why people are scratching their head. How did we get here? We've been telling you that this was the plan. We've been telling you that this is what they were going to do. And so these people who put all of their faith in the government that they saw as compassionate and caring, the government that was going to care for them in their old age, doesn't do that. Instead, they say, you know, it's a Ponzi scheme. We pick the age of 65. Bismarck did in Germany when they first instituted, because that was life expectancy. They didn't expect to pay any of this stuff out to people. They just wanted to have a way to tax you, another excuse to add another tax. And so as the demographics started to present themselves, people are not having families. Everybody's having to work, and then there's environmental issues besides societal issues and so forth, and now we're accelerating this. We're poisoning the relationship between men and women. We're poisoning the idea that there even is such a thing as men and women. We got to get rid of all those heteronormative ideas. And so there's no children. So we got to import people as part of this Ponzi scheme to pay for your retirement. And yet they become the tax burden. They go on welfare. 60, 70, 80% of them go on welfare. And that's what they're starting to wake up to in Sweden. And so as this is happening in Sweden and in Brussels, they're not just protesting the gas taxes. They are protesting the migration, of course. And so in Morocco, we have the Marrakesh Migration Pact. A majority of UN states adopted today a non-binding, they say non-binding, I'll tell you why it is binding, global pact to better handle migrant flows. But some states have opted out, and we're going to tell you why. This is going to be legally binding. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Ring Christmas bells, merrily ring, tell all the world Jesus is King. Loudly proclaim with one accord the happy tale, welcome the Lord. Ring Christmas bells, sound far and near, the birthday of Jesus is here. Herald the news to old and young, tell it to all in every tongue.
Welcome back. Yes, as part of our 12 days of Christmas sale at InfoWarsStore.com, we have massive discounts, up to 75% off. We have free shipping store-wide. We have double Patriot Points. That's our reward system to get you discounts in the future based on your purchases. We also have added an exclusive 24-hour specials each day, part of our 12 days of Christmas. Each day we have a different 24-hour special. Today's special is Bodies. That's our turmeric formula. Enhanced with other natural ingredients. And of course, turmeric is one of the best natural ways to fight inflammation in your body. That's why we call it BODEES. That is now 60% off as part of a 24-hour special. And we've also are putting in a free t-shirt with every order. The free t-shirt right now is the We Are All Alex Jones, the anti-censorship shirt. So with every order, you get a free t-shirt. You can get 60% off the 24-hour special BODEES turmeric formula and up to 75% off of other products. Take a look at the massive specials that we have as part of our 12 days of Christmas at InfoWarsStore.com. We really do appreciate your support. You can give the gift of health, you can give the gift of preparedness, and you can give the gift of free speech shopping at InfoWarsStore.com. Well, let's take a look at this migrant treaty that was passed today in Marrakesh. Not everybody signed on to it. As a matter of fact, you had a lot of people who had reservations, even though they signed on to it, they had still had reservations about it. One of those countries, of course, is the Netherlands, where they said they had protesters talking about this, as well as the confiscatory taxes on fuel, trying to take away energy, not just your transportation, but just all energy in general. Talked about how the higher taxes by Merkel and others in Germany have caused the death of some German pensioners who could not afford to heat their homes because of the high energy prices. It has to do with life expectancy, folks, not just with the quality of life as well, and not just with your freedom of movement. Those are all very important. Any one of those would be worth fighting for. Collectively, they are all worth having this fight for. But this is about this migrant treaty that was signed by most of the nations of the world in Marrakesh. A lot of people pull back and say, it's not legally binding. Don't worry about it. It's not legally binding. Well, they're not buying that in the Netherlands. And they're seeing what has been happening in the Netherlands, as I pointed out. People in the Netherlands, people in Sweden, people in France saying, they're destroying our standard of living. Yes, that's the plan. It is not one politician. It is not a mistake. It was a deliberate plan. But as they keep saying, don't worry, don't worry. It's just a statement of intent. It is not legally binding. The people in the Netherlands think otherwise. The Netherlands signed on to this, but they plan on issuing a statement of position, quote unquote. It'll stress that the Dutch government will not be legally subjected to following the guidelines outlined in the pact. Well, why would they feel like they needed to do that if it wasn't going to be legally binding? Well, here's what one Dutch politician had to say. I'll play this clip for you. He knows where this is headed. He knows that what this is a criminalization of any criticism of migration. And here's what he had to say.
And one basic element of this new agreement is the extension of the definition of hate speech. The agreement wants to criminalize migration speech. Criticism of migration will become a criminal offense. And media outlets, and that also concerns you, that give room to criticism of migration can be shut down.
That's it. That's it right there.
The compact for migration is legalization of mass migration. It's declaring migration as a human right. So in fact, it will become impossible to criticize Ms. Merkel's welcome migrants politics without being at risk to be jailed for hate speech. So this agreement, to our humble opinion, is a coup d'etat of pro-migrant liberal globalists. And it will greatly benefit multinationals. Because, you know, countries who import the third world will become the third world. And it's absolutely clear, and you all know that, that in third world countries, multinationals dictate the rules.
Boy, he laid it out there. If you import the third world, you become the third world. And he knows exactly what this is about. Here in America, what does this look like? Well, you got billionaires demanding fast-track green cards for 400,000 visa workers. We're not talking about credit cards. I know it's Christmas time, but no. This is the this is migration visas. But they want them to be in the job market. They want them to be in the ballot box. And so you've got people like Jeff Bezos and Bill Gates, Mark Benioff, urging GOP and President Trump to fast-track 400,000 workers because, you know, they're going to come here and take your jobs. Even if they're not going to come here and go on welfare, it makes it harder for Americans to get jobs. It undercuts the pay of Americans. And as we've seen with these H-1B visas and so forth, they've got a million different variants of this. We've seen how Disney used this to bring in lower wage service workers. It wasn't like the American workers couldn't do their job at Walt Disney World. They fired them. They said, we're bringing in people from foreign countries, basically people who don't have the same English skills that the Americans did. So they're not going to do that service job quite as well, but they will do it more cheaply. And they said, you will train your replacements or you won't get any severance pay. This is where this is coming from, folks. And so as he was laying that out, he said it's going to criminalize it. They're going to make sure that this is defined as if you criticize their migration policies of people like Merkel and Macron and others, then you'll be declared a hate speech organization. They will pull the plug on you. They will criminally prosecute you, quite frankly. That's what they've been doing in the lead up to this on social media. That's why they've come after InfoWars. That's why they've come after 2 months later, another 800 organizations. If you oppose their policies, you are taken off of social media. You're denounced as being hateful and you are purged. And if we get used to that, then the next step is criminal prosecution by the governments. That's what this migration treaty is really about. That's where these people are going. They do it by degrees. They do it step by step. It is a plan. They haven't blundered into this. This isn't a mistake by Macron. It isn't even arrogance by Macron. It is desperation. Desperate to get this going before the people wake up even more quickly. The boiling frogs analogy, which I understand it's just an analogy. It's like lemmings and so forth. It's, you know, lemmings don't really do that. Frogs don't really do it, but it's a great analogy. You understand what we're talking about. Well, they boil the frogs in France too quickly. And now they're out of the pot and they're boiling the country. And we need to all wake up as to what's going on with this. This is not a mistake. It's not a blunder. It's not one politician. Yes, Merkel and Macron are bad, but they got many more people waiting in the wings that look different, will say different things to you, but they're still following the same plan from the UN through the EU, through their national governments to try to undermine the national governments. And so as this is happening in Marrakesh, the U.S. government has disavowed this. They did it late last year under Trump. Since then, Austria, the Czech Republic, the Dominican Republic, all of us, all these countries are out. We did not sign into this migration treaty. Hungary, Latvia, Poland, Slovakia, all pulled out of the process. What is this thing? Well, it lays out 23 objectives to open up legal migration and to discourage illegal border crossings, they say, as the number of people on the move globally has surged to more than 250 million. That's not a comprehensive list. Also, countries like Israel and Italy are out of it. Israel and Australia weren't initially against it. However, they pulled out at the last minute. Concerned about their sovereignty. As Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel said, we have a duty to protect our borders against illegal infiltrators. That's what we've done, and that's what we will continue to do. President Trump should listen to him. President Trump has a duty to protect our borders against infiltrators. He can and he should use our Defense Department to do that. He should use our defense budget to do that. It's absolutely insane that you let the mainstream media maintain that we don't have the authority or the capacity to defend our own borders. They don't have any problem with us invading any country for no reason whatsoever, but you must not defend your own borders. Oh, yes, we can use the military budget to house people that have illegally crossed over into our country and put them in military bases, and we can spend Defense Department budgets on that, but we can't use the Defense Department or Defense Department money to keep them out? Nonsense. Stop letting them dictate that to you, President Trump. We'll be right back.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Let's dig down a little bit into this migration treaty that was just signed in Marrakesh, Morocco, by the majority of countries. Again, the United States is not part of that. Several other nations have declined to do it. Some of the ones who have signed into it, it is dividing their government. As a matter of fact, in Belgium on Sunday, Prime Minister Charles Michel announced that his government was set to continue as a minority because they lost the support of the Flemish Alliance. They quit his coalition because it disapproved of this migrant accord. Israel and Australia were not initially against the pact. However, they pulled out last month, citing sovereignty concerns. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison said this pact could undermine Australia's strong border protection laws and practices. But again, how is it going to do this? The Dutch politician who said they're going to bring this in gradually, they're going to criminalize gradually any speech against the migration policies of the globalists like Angela Merkel. You will be denounced as it'll be denounced as hate speech if you criticize that. And then because you are a hateful organization and you are violating human rights because they're putting this out as a human right, then you will be destroyed as a news organization. This is what they're trying to do to InfoWars. Angela Merkel, of course, it's cost her the majority that she had. Her popularity is plummeting. They have a position for her, however, within the EU. So she's taken care of personally. And she is totally unrepentant about what she has done to the German people. She said her government made only one mistake in its immigration policy, and it wasn't made when she brought in the refugees by the millions into Germany. The mistake, she said, happened when Berlin failed to care enough about the asylum seekers. And that's her only regret, that they didn't do more for these people. Throwing the German people under the bus. Now, that's not happening in Austria. In Austria, they have a conservative, nationalist prime minister there. Vienna bluntly stated last month that migration is not a human right. And yet, the way they're going to push this is going to be through hate speech and declaring it as a human right. In Canada, there were anti-migration demonstrators that went to Parliament Hill in Ottawa on Saturday. The Canadian government has stressed that this is not a legally binding treaty. Oh, but it will be used by the courts. It will be used by the media corporations to establish it as a human right, to establish anybody that opposes it as hate speech. And, of course, you can see what they're doing with hate speech and these alleged human rights that they're inventing left and right. It's part of their political agenda. That's the way it's going to work. In Estonia, a member of the European Parliament was physically attacked by supporters of the country's anti-immigration party last month due to the fact that he supported this pact. Well, quite frankly, they are the ones who are attacking their own people. As RT says, although the text is not legally binding and is being seen as more of a declaration, it is worded in a way which encourages domestic courts and authorities, and I would say internet oligarchs, to consider it when making decisions based on interpretations of the law. So it all folds together. And that's exactly how it is going to be used. Now, as you had these riots going on the weekend, the yellow vests, they weren't just protesting the fuel. They're also protesting this migration pact. They had signs that said no to Marrakesh because that's where they were meeting to push this through. Morocco is where the people go to sign away their sovereignty this weekend. And as Breitbart's Daily Poll points out, he said, they're signing away our sovereignty, our freedom, our identity. This is one of the most pernicious agreements ever devised by the UN. The UN Global Compact for Migration. Folks, it is another one of these UN agendas. And you need to understand, the war on drugs was a UN agenda. The war on UN has an agenda to take away small arms. And of course, the climate change situation was a UN agenda. And that's what this migration pact is. More about this when we come back. Stay with us.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
The UN Global Compact for Migration was signed by most countries in Marrakesh, Morocco today. And again, it's another UN agenda like UN Agenda 21, the UN 2030 agenda for quote-unquote sustainability, as they do everything that they can to make sure that we cannot sustain our culture, our economy, our laws, our countries. That's not going to be sustained. Your freedom is not going to be sustained. Your sovereignty as a nation is not going to be sustained. As Dulling Poll on Breitbart points out, here's how toxic this all is. He said, when a country as emasculated and politically correct as Australia finds it too much to swallow. Even Australia pulled out of it, but not Ireland, not Canada under Trudeau, and not the UK. But it is a master plan coming from the globalist UN to take down our countries. And it's not the kind of migration that we would even like to see. This is not somebody coming in with unique skills. That's the way the visas are being portrayed, as the corporations are demanding 400,000 visas. I question whether that is necessary or not. He talks about, Dullingpole talks about the fact that he's got his eldest son decided that he would migrate to Hong Kong, where it was a freer, more entrepreneurial environment, at least for the time being, until the Chinese can exert their authority there. But in the meantime, he might be able to become pretty wealthy there. But as you have people, skilled people moving around, that's not what this is about. This is about 250 million people that are just huddling masses, not yearning for freedom, but yearning for free stuff. 70 to 80% of them coming in on welfare. And that's what the people in France, in Sweden, in Holland are now seeing. And this is the way it's spelled out in the UN Global Compact on Migration. Objective 17, eliminate all forms of discrimination. See, if you disagree, as the Dutch politician said, if you disagree with their migration policies, you will be discriminating against them. We commit to eliminate all forms of discrimination, all racism, all racial discrimination, all violence, all xenophobia. Oh, so you don't like somebody coming into, you know, you don't like massive numbers. You must be afraid of strangers. You don't want anybody coming in. Well, as he pointed out, if you're going to import the third world, you become the third world. And that's why the UN and the globalists are doing this to us. They want us to become as helpless in opposing them as the countries that they have exercised their colonial domination over in the past and what they are now currently exercising in the way of neocolonialism. They want to destroy us as a country, as a middle class, so that they can do whatever they wish. Their only opposition is coming from the U.S. and Western Europe. They have to destroy those countries before they can establish their global governance. And, of course, they also, this is also reading from the compact, the Migration Compact from the U.N., enact, implement, or maintain legislation that penalizes hate crimes. To provide medical, legal, and psychosocial assistance for victims. Psychosocial assistance. I don't even know what that is. So, you know, you can say that this is not legally binding. It will be pushed in just like these other issues. It'll be pushed in through the courts. They will use this as a guideline. It'll be used by the internet oligarchs, as they are already doing. They have already begun putting this through, just as the internet companies have already begun implementing the social credit system in China, which is at its heart a globalist tactic, a tool of control that's going to be exercised worldwide. You'll do exactly what they say and only what they say. If you dissent in any way, shape, or form, you will be hammered down and you will be locked down. You will not move. You will not have work. You will not have a place to live. They will lock you up in their smart cities because you're stupid. Too stupid to see this agenda. And now is the time, folks. We're going to stop this, or they are going to destroy us and our children's lives. To sum this up in this article, they point out 78% of European citizens want tighter control of immigration. So they're going to have this pact where they can define them as racist, discriminatory, hateful, and shut them down with hate speech laws. 50% of Kenyans say they would move to another country. And he said, guess what? They're not interested in moving to Zimbabwe. Where do you think they're going to go? 12 Germans have to work in order to pay the cost of every one of the 2 or 3 million migrants that Merkel imported into the country. Think about that. Every one of the migrants that come in, they go on welfare. You got to have 12 Germans working to pay for each of their social services. It's just like what we see here in the United States. They bring the dreamers in. The dreamers have dreams. Their dreams are good. The American dream, however, is being killed by the dreamers. The dreamers come in. They're young, and so they get a free education. Anybody in the world who wishes to come in here, according to Democrats, they can be educated for free. How are they going to be educated? Well, they're going to be educated when they go to the government schools and they go to the government colleges. They're going to be educated to be Democrats. They're going to be reliable Democrat voters, virtually every single one of them. Some of them will think for themselves, but it'll be a minority of them. The rest of them will be indoctrinated into becoming Democrats. That's why they want them to come here. That's why they want you to pay for it. That's why they want you to live in a smaller house or apartment if you get one at all. Because the taxes are going to jump exponentially to build schools for all the children who come here to be educated at your expense. Goodbye, American dream. Hello, dreamers. And same thing in Germany. Germany, where they began Social Security as a Ponzi scheme. Where 18 years ago, the UN was saying, we've got to bring people in to pay for your retirement. Because now you're living past 65. We thought you'd be dead by 65. That's why we came up with that age for retirement. But unfortunately, you're living longer. So we've got to cut your energy supplies. And now we've got to have, since we made it so that you don't have children, we're going to have to bring people in from other countries to support you in your old age. Well, guess what? In your old age, you're going to be supporting the people they bring in from other countries. In 2017, the Swedish government spent $18.6 billion paying for refugees, 19% of its annual budget. That's why the social welfare net in Sweden and elsewhere throughout Europe is collapsing. Collapsing. It is the failure of socialism. Socialism fails everywhere. That's why the globalists love it so much. They want to have a small group of technocratic elites running a world government. That's been the plan. It's been the plan for 40, 50 years. Going back to Zbigniew Brzezinski's, Mika's dad came up with that. They loved it so much, they put him in charge of a new organization, the Trilateral Commission, to push that idea that he wrote a book about. So how is this looking? Let's take a look at some of the third world here. Your time is up, white people. That's what they're saying in South Africa right now. First, they had the communists in there saying, we're going to just take land without any compensation. You had the Zulu saying, you're not going to take the land from the white farmers. They may be 20% of the population, but they grow 80% of the food. And if you take their land, you're going to be coming after us next. Zulus are smart. They never lost or gave up any of their land, not to anybody. And but yet, you've got the South African parliament run by a bunch of communists now. We worshipped Nelson Mandela, didn't we? In the West. Not me, but the West collectively. It was pretty clear he was a Marxist fossil. He was a tool at the very best. The worst thing you could say about him was that he really knew where this was going on. I think perhaps he was a tool. I don't know. Nevertheless, we now see what they're about. 183 votes in favor of just taking the land now, 77 against it. They amended the Constitution. Now they're giving the government power to take land from white farmers. They're doing it legally. See, it's great. You know, we're going to do this legally. Let's not just go out there and, you know, start killing people and stealing their land. Let's pass a law. Let's amend the Constitution. Great. Opposition parties have objected vehemently, with the Freedom Front Plus's Anton Albert saying, when the blood flows, it will be on your hands, because they're going to fight back. But then they say, land must be nationalized and socialized for the benefit of the people, especially the working class and women. Those who oppose want the perpetuation of wrongs of the past. Does this person sound like Kamala Harris or Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez? I mean, this is exactly the rhetoric that these socialists here in America are using against us. You got to pay for the sins of the past. You got to give up your land. Reparations. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Christmas season, you see the communists decided that what they want for Christmas are the lands and the freedoms of other people. And of course, that is happening openly in South Africa. But we also have our own communists here, even though they call themselves progressives and socialists. We'll get into that in just a moment. But how does this look? We've already seen this happen in Zimbabwe, for example. And now, after finally getting rid of Robert Mugabe, and they've got a new leader, but it is not a new day. Things really haven't changed there. This is what socialism looks like in Zimbabwe. One person says, we cannot talk of Christmas anymore. They said there's no holiday mood in a country where there is a currency crisis, where people risk jail time in order to buy basics like food and medicine. Zimbabweans navigate from one currency to the other, often tapping the black market because the government even issues salaries in a currency and a payment form that it won't accept. How crazy is that? I mean, Zimbabwe, famous a few years ago for its hyperinflation that reached more than 1,000,000,000% inflation rate. Even Venezuela hasn't caught up to that yet, but they're working on it. And then as they now currently have a shortage in American dollars, the government decided that they would fix it with more government policies. They issued surrogate currency. They called it bond notes, and they also have something else they call mobile money, which is electronic funds deposited into bank accounts. But retailers don't want it. And most people don't want the mobile money or the bonds. And here's the amazing thing. Even the government doesn't want this and will not accept it for things like taxes on imported cars. Even the government won't accept that in many cases. And so one Zimbabwean says, how can the government refuse to accept the money that it uses to pay its own people and then arrest us for looking for the only currency that actually works? And if you want, so what the people are doing is they're having to, in order to be able, since nobody will take this junk currency that they get paid in by the government, not even the government in some cases, they have to go to the black market. They have to try to change it over, which means that they lose most of its value if they don't actually get arrested by getting into the black market. As another person told the AP, he said, the black market is my only option. We're innocent people just trying to survive, but the government has turned us into criminals. Mm-hmm. Yeah, remember that other UN agenda, the war on drugs? Same thing in many cases. People trying to get medicine. Oh, but you become a criminal if you try to get a natural medicine. In Venezuela, they're now importing 300,000 barrels of fuel a day. Venezuela, one of the countries in the world that has the most amount of oil. But this dysfunctional government can't manage to produce anything. I mean, you know, look at Zimbabwe, the communists there. They can't even produce a fiat currency that anybody wants to use, let alone anything real. And so that's what's happening in Venezuela now. Since February, they said in Venezuela, we haven't paid a single imported cargo with cash. They're out of money. We are exchanging the imported fuel for Venezuelan asphalt, natural gas, fuel oil, residual crude, whatever we have. Their average oil output is currently under 1,000,000 barrels of oil per day. To give put that in perspective, that's a 30-year low. And production is in a total freefall. Why? Because the government has taken it over. Because the government can't produce the goods. Why socialism fails, the Uganda edition. And this is from Zero Hedge. Most modern-day historians like to blame British colonialism and U.S. capitalism for the problems that plague Africa. However, even going back to tribes of yesterday, researchers come across tales of sadism and savagery, like burying people alive, roasting flesh and bone as punishment. It's a human thing, folks. Slavery, atrocities like this, they're not limited to any one demographic. It's not something that is exclusively white or black or red or yellow. Every group, people group does this type of thing. But when the communists get into power, it takes a special turn. You know, we can look at the currency issues and the communism under Robert Mugabe in Zimbabwe. I'm just talking about what their current state is, even though they got rid of him. Look at Sudan, Somalia, and so forth. But Uganda's Idi Amin, a special case. As they point out, like other accounts of failed socialist experiments, Uganda is entrenched, was entrenched in a one-man conquest to seize absolute power, kill dissidents, nationalize private industry, just like we see happening in Venezuela. Ugandans, however, did not resort to cannibalism, but Idi Amin did. Did you know that? Did you know the guy was a cannibal? He loved to eat the flesh of the people that he had conquered, his political enemies. He would actually cut off their heads and put them in freezers. He had an entire giant freezer full of frozen heads of his political enemies. His first act was to expel more than 80,000 South Asians and to seize their assets, just like we see happening in South Africa. Same pattern. You can come up with any kind of an excuse against any people group. You know, the Chinese under Mao did it. They came after other Chinese who were intellectuals, they said. They were too bourgeois. So we have to send them to the fields, send them to the prison camps, and so forth. Second thing he did was to expropriate private property, to nationalize industry, to take over agriculture. It's what they're doing in South Africa. How'd that work out for Idi Amin in Uganda? How'd that work out in Zimbabwe? He said, earnings, what'd they do with the money? Oh, well, what you would expect these dictators to do. They'd buy weapons, they'd buy luxury items for the military, things like gold, Rolex watches, Scotch whiskey. He believed that this would get him permanent loyalty from his mercenaries, and he quoted an old African proverb, a dog with a bone in its mouth can't bite. So he had confiscate the wealth of the people who are producing stuff, just like they're about to do in South Africa. Then he would hand the money out to the military, creating a corrupt group of mercenaries loyal to him, he hoped, because they were being paid off by him. And then, of course, he printed money, as they always do. Inflation topped 700%. Toilet paper would cost more than 2 weeks' wages. But then there was the cannibalism aspects of this as well. It said the first time this happened was at a formal event. It was a year after he took power. And at the end of the dinner, the formal dinner, he had his people bring out the frozen head of the former Army Chief of Staff and put it in the dinner table for the guests to admire. And I imagine you would have to admire it, or you might be the next centerpiece on the table, right? He eventually constructed a room designed for with refrigerators that housed his vast collection of frozen heads. It was known as the Botanical Room. And then as he ruled from 1971 to 1979, he did things like having prisoners forced to kill each other to save their own lives. He had people whose last name started with O being slaughtered because it was common for a couple of tribes that he didn't like for their people to have their names end in O. And then, of course, making a point of eating the flesh of his human victims. Why? Because that makes him powerful. And as we see what is happening in Cuba, remember how all the socialists and progressives told us that we needed to have a healthcare system like that in Cuba? Great. And yet now we're seeing how they treated their dissidents. That is coming out. As we see that their buildings, thousands of them, are literally crumbling.
Powers, keep on lying.
Using free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. We're pleased to have us join. Joining us here in the studio, Nick Begich, and of course you can find him at EarthPlus.com. That's his website. We were talking about the climate change issues that have united people across France in opposition to massive taxes. But of course, this is an agenda that is being used to sell everything. It is the all-purpose globalist agenda to sell everything. And Nick was just reminding me as he came in here that we do have one of his documentaries called Earth Changes, where he takes us on directly. And folks, right now, you can get that free shipping. We have massive discounts across the board at InfoWarsStore.com. This is a documentary that we do carry at InfoWars, Earth Changes. Tell us a little bit about that, Nick.
Well, it really is contrarian, and it was produced a number of years ago, and it really is taking a very different position from the mainstream on climate change. And so what I did with that is sort of deconstruct some of the arguments, you know, because this has turned into like the unifying issue, as you just said. But it's really another false flag, only this time it's a false flag really dealing with environmental issues and politicizing science, which I think is a huge mistake as we look forward into this. And when you look at sort of the biggest part of that narrative is the El Nino, El Nina phenomena, which has to do with ocean temperatures. And what we are just coming into the program off air, we were talking about a little bit of this.
Yeah, and they've just talked about how there's cooling, major cooling going on in the ocean. They're seeing a decrease in solar activity and so forth. All these things related, and they're much bigger factors, aren't they, than what we're seeing from mankind.
Right, and this is a really important fact. You know, before the climate change issue was as big of an issue as it is today, actually BBC did a special on climate change. And one of the things that they noted was that the argument is it follows the CO2 footprint. Okay, mm-hmm. So but if you look at from World War II, where the Industrial Revolution took a whole new lift, right, in terms mm-hmm. of what we were doing. Mm-hmm. But from that point, from the 40s until the early 80s, the temperature gradient was dropping.
Yes.
Well, the CO2 gradient was climbing. But if you look at the solar charts, they're almost perfect.
Yes.
They just a slight lag, but they move just perfect harmony. Okay, the solar cycle as it relates to actual climate on the Earth. But then you add another factor in, and this is the factor of ocean temperatures. And the physics of it is the sun hits the surface of the sea, and 97%+ of that energy is dissipated, mm-hmm. and very little is absorbed. And in fact, everyone who's ever swam in the ocean knows this, because as soon as you get a couple feet below, the temperature starts to drop. So how does a plume appear in the Pacific of heat mass in the ocean? The only way that can happen is undersea venting, mm-hmm. where 100% of the energy, all of it is absorbed, has no place else to go. And when it comes up and the ocean currents spread it out, it looks just like a plume, just like those satellite images of El Nino.
Oh, yeah.
And so this is more realistic. And there's actually 600 charted undersea volcanoes in the South Pacific alone.
Wow. And we've seen a lot of increase in activity. I mean, you're from Alaska.
Right.
And so we just had the earthquake up there.
Right.
We've seen a lot of increased seismic activity and so forth recently.
Right. And in Alaska at one point, this is back in the 90s, the ocean temperatures in Prince William Sound jumped like 15 degrees in the summer. Mm. Unheard of. Because they say it takes 100 years to get 1 degree up in the ocean. So what happened in Prince William Sound? Mm-hmm. Well, the only explanation is if you look at where that sits, it's all volcanics. And that's exactly the source of this heat. Mm-hmm. It is volcanics. And that's what's changing the things on the Earth. If you look at ocean heights, which is another big issue in the climate change argument, they say it's going to go up 3 feet in 100 years. But if you look at the historical record, 12,000 years ago, the oceans were 350 feet lower by all the scientific literature. Everyone can look that up. 350 feet lower. That's 3 feet every 100 years. Mm-hmm. Now, isn't that interesting? It just meets the average.
Yeah.
It just meets the average. Now, there were periods where a lot happened, you know, a lot of melting, and then there's periods where a little bit happened. In the region I come from, Anchorage, Alaska, 6,000 years ago, the ice was 4,000 feet thick there. That is not very long ago in geologic history. Mm-hmm. This is a flash. So climate change, global warming, mm-hmm. has been going on a very long time. In fact, the last mastodons disappeared from an island off the coast of Alaska only 4,000 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is like a flash. Just, you know, think about how many extinctions of species from the Ice Age. Saber-toothed tigers, sloth, flat-nosed bears, on and on and on. And we weren't here disturbing the environment. These are the natural changes that occurred and occur.
Yeah.
From the dinosaurs to today.
Yeah. They may be bringing those back. We might have
a
park instead of a Jurassic park.
Well, they're
park,
talking right? about it. Yeah. You know? And actually, the Russians are making some progress on that from some of the tissue they recovered.
That's right. But, you know, when you're talking about this, they have to focus on one factor, of course, because they can then say, well, that's because of man's activity. So CO2. Right. And as you're pointing out with the oceans, you know, you're going to not get those types of temperature gradients, you know, from solar activity or even something that's on the surface. And yet they will look at the CO2. But even there, they have a problem. Even there, they have to try to hide the fact that it's inversely proportional. You know, the CO2 has been going up to record amounts. Well, we haven't been having record temperatures everywhere. We haven't been having the kind of hockey stick that we see. I was with a group that fought for a long time to try to get the emails of Michael Mann, the guy who came up with the hockey stick idea that was used so much by Al Gore. He was talking to people in East Anglia University, part of that Climate Gate thing.
Right.
We said, show us the data. You've already published your papers. You've used this to create public policy. Right. We need to see your basic data. And that's the thing that they fight the hardest. That's what got the people at the EPA so upset with Scott Pruitt. He said, we're going to show data whenever we come up. You know, you're going to make your data, your raw data that you base your conclusions on so we can review it scientifically. They don't want scientific review.
No, because it's about politics.
Yeah.
It's about an environmental agenda that is that has found a focal point. And the environmental issues are important. I mean, everyone knows that our role as humans on the earth is a stewardship role.
Right.
And so this is fundamental to who we are as human beings.
That's but that's very different from environmentalism.
Okay? That's very
stewardship
different.
Stewardship is totally different.
Yep. It's recognizing the interaction and complexity of the earth and recognizing the give and take, if you will, between humans and other animal species in terms of feeding us. I mean, when you go into the indigenous world, you know, there's a lot of respect. A deep level of respect that comes right out of the core of people, because this is our natural way of being, to be concerned, to be concerned about the nest we all live in.
Yeah.
But when you politicize it and you take the science out of it, that really disarms us from doing the kinds of things that can truly protect the planet. Mm-hmm. I mean, and the things that we all see that are degrading around us. And I mean, even the Chinese get it at a certain level, because when you start choking your people literally by the pollution, you have to take an action that's different. But there's, you know, there's a lot in the climate change debate, and from my perspective, it really was the unifying force between environmental organizations to find a way in.
Yes,
and that's exactly how it's been used as a
Well, you know, you talk about China and choking the people with pollution because they have such dirty power plants and so forth.
Right.
But under the Paris Climate Accord, they were going to be able to continue to build without any limitation in terms of quantity or quality of the kind of power plants that they were going to build. They were going to be able to do that up until after 2030. And so it was very clear, even to the people who bought in to the man-made climate change agenda, that this was simply a politicized way to redistribute wealth, to redistribute manufacturing and economics and everything from America to China and India, where they wouldn't have any restrictions on them whatsoever, but we would immediately have clamps and reductions put on us immediately, even though we have cleaner power plants.
Right. And you know, when you look at what the Chinese have done in recognition that they're really choking their population, they've actually tried to do some things, you know, on a mass scale. They've used their military, in fact, to do reseeding programs that cover areas as big as some of our states.
Yeah, they've been very upfront about their capability of doing geoengineering, and that's another aspect of it as well.
And there
we got to take a break. We'll be right back. We're talking to Nick Begich here in studio. He's visiting us out of Alaska. We'll talk to him a little bit about the earthquake and about some other issues. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Christmas music. I'll just remind you one more time, we have our 12 Days of Christmas sale at InfoWarsStore.com. You can get up to 75% off many items. We have a daily special today. The daily special is Bodies Turmeric Formula, 60% off. So we have these specials that we're changing each and every day. With any order, you get a free shirt, a free t-shirt. Today, the t-shirt is We Are All Alex Jones. It's the anti-censorship shirt. And you get free shipping and double Patriot points on anything that you purchase. Nick Begich is our guest right now. Of course, his website is earthpulse.com. And we were talking about a documentary that he did a few years ago called Earth Changes. That is also available at InfoWarsStore.com. You get all the benefits I was just talking about, the free shipping, the free t-shirt, and so forth. We're going to talk a little bit more about that, and we want to talk about what happened with the earthquake and Anchorage, Alaska. He was there when that happened. And of course, Nick is from Alaska. He's had his share of earthquakes. I grew up in Florida, so I saw a lot of hurricanes. But you were, I've never been in an earthquake, so I can't even imagine what you went through. But they recovered amazingly quickly.
Yeah, this is It's really a statement of really Alaskan's character and how we function. And it's changed a lot. I mean, it's not the same as when I grew up there, but people do pull together. You know, we're pretty isolated. You know, we're not an island off of the West Coast. We really are up there when you look at a real map of the world. But we're so far removed from the rest of the country that we really have to be self-sustaining and self-supporting in a lot of different ways. And our power grid is independent. It's not connected to the rest of the world. We're independent power grids, and most of our villages are independent of that independent grid. Because they're so remote.
Yeah.
And so when you think about a natural disaster in Anchorage, 7.0 earthquake and 2,600 aftershocks in the 2 weeks following, ranging the aftershocks, say about 100 of them over 4.0. And I was laughing a little bit coming in today to studio because we just heard a report that I read on an Australian news feed, number one story, you know, 5.0, actually it was 4.8, I think was the final number. In the Australian news, I look at the Anchorage papers, not even mentioned, okay, because they're happening way too frequently right now. But a 7.0 is a pretty serious quake. And I'll give you a couple comparisons. 1964, which was the one everybody hears about, was the biggest one in, you know, that in recording.
And you were there.
And I was there for that. I was just six, but I sure remember the vividness of it. But it was 200 times more powerful than the one we just had. The one in 64 lasted a little over 4 minutes. This one only lasted 34 seconds. The one in 64 ripped a fault line, moved a fault line over 500 miles of length, was disrupted, whereas this one disrupted only 19 miles. So, and by magnitude, 64 was 200 times more power. But the one we just had was the equivalent of 199,000 tons of TNT.
Wow.
Okay.
So what is that like? I've never been in an earthquake. What is it like when that happens? If you're in a building, I mean, what's going on in the building?
What's going on in the building is you're looking up for everything that's falling.
Yeah.
Because the first thing you want to do is protect yourself from falling objects. So that's the first thing. Stay calm. Stay relaxed, because getting stressed out over this is the absolute wrong move. You have to be calm. You have to notice what's falling. Moving into door frames, which are more secure in most structures. These are the standard, or getting underneath something. And this is what all of our kids were trained for in our school district. Now, over 44,000 kids that day, no serious injuries.
Wow.
They all knew what to do. They all did it. My daughter, 11-year-old, was in her classroom, and a rip opened up 8 inches wide, right down the wall in front of her, 10 feet from her desk.
Wow.
Ceiling tiles were collapsing on everyone.
Wow.
All of her classmates are crying and upset. She's calm. Okay. She's not understanding why everyone's upset, because she's taught to be calm in these situations.
Well, you have to do that in kind of disaster.
This is in kind of
natural or man-made.
That's right.
You have a shooting that's going on. Keep your head about you.
That's right.
Way to survive.
Only way to survive, and the right to make the right decisions at those critical moments. So the kids did great all the way. You know, schools reopened this morning in Anchorage, all but two out of 88 facilities reopened. They had massive damage. It was handled extremely rapidly. The infrastructure was up and running. I mean, I think the longest power outage for the bulk of the population was a day. Mine went out for an hour. My son's never went out.
You guys handled that better than we handled snowstorms back in North Carolina.
Actually, there was an editorial by a woman who just came on our daily news staff from Georgia. And she commented that a 2-inch snowfall creates more gridlock than a 7.0 earthquake in Alaska. And it totally impressed her by the way Alaskans pull together. Those are the moments where we all recognize our humanity and our divinity and our need to serve each other in a certain way. And our politics kind of falls away in these moments as we recognize our interdependence in those moments. And people pull together. And it's a beautiful thing to see when it happens, because it reminds us again of, you know, in the biggest of traumas are these opportunities for real change. And so whether it's a natural disaster or a political disaster, they wake us up as a population. And so, you know, coming out of it, what I see is a reminder that the core values that we share in common. Mm-hmm. And that's what comes through these natural disasters. That's what...
And because something is there that you have to address, you sweep aside the politics. We're talking about how these road projects here in Austin have this drug on and on and on. There's one down by the airport that you went through when you flew in. And then there was another one that went on for years and years. Big overruns financially, overruns in terms of time and so forth. And all they did in both these cases was just add a single toll road because that was what the politicians wanted. They didn't do anything to alleviate the problem. And you guys would fix this. It reminds me of Alexis de Tocqueville's Democracy in America, where he said, I go there when they've got a problem, the entire community comes together and they solve it. And that's what we see now in Alaska that's been lost in the lower 48.
It has.
We have turned over our lives to these politicians and the corruption that is inherent in that system.
That's exactly it. And self-reliance. Mm-hmm. Okay, now this is Alaska. Okay, before every fall, before the winter, I refill my fuel cans. Okay, mm-hmm. I double check my generator, and I have standby power that will give me refrigeration and heat, mm-hmm. The basics, because as an Alaskan, I know better. Now, there's a list of things you have in your house. You always have an extra case of water. You have some filters. You have some basic stuff. This is the way we live.
And you guys are kind of like preppers that they make fun of here.
Yeah, but we've done it.
Anybody that does that here in Lower 48, you're a paranoid prepper, right?
This is our normal, right? I mean, when I think about what people get flipped out about in the lower 48 states, when people, they go into somebody's gun room and they say they had 400 rounds of ammunition and 15 guns. And from our perspective, that's like a Black Friday shopping spree. we do it.
Why aren't you better prepared?
Yeah. Exactly. Well, and because when you think about
it. When you look at that, yeah.
When you look at a map of Alaska and you see where our communities are, mm-hmm. and that 80% of our state is not connected by a road system. It's all about self-sustaining, mm-hmm. self-reliance. And it's rough in the bush, but you can live. Mm-hmm. You can survive it. And you can deal with it in the harshest conditions, literally, in the world. So we're ready. I mean, and our state's ready. Because as a state government, we've seen enough in Alaska to know to prepare. And so we have good preparation. We have good training for our kids. And I think it makes a difference. I remember talking to a little five-year-old one day, and some of the hazards of Alaska, right? He's given me the rundown on what you do when you run into a bear, right? Now, how many kids in the rest of the country at five or six can give you that story, right? But this is typical Alaskan kid. They know what to do. They've been taught.
So what do you do?
No, no. Depends on the species, because if it's a grizzly bear, you stand your ground, mm-hmm. And you back off very slowly. Mm-hmm. Black bears, you never run because they have the mm-hmm. tendency to chase. So there's, different ways. A black bear might approach you and be right in there, and you mm-hmm. could beat him back, mm-hmm. and they'll sometimes flee, okay? Whereas a grizzly would never do it.
Yeah.
He would become more aggressive. Yeah. So, I mean,
But that's kind of a thing I've seen back east. You get into a natural area, and whatever the predator is there, whether it's mountain lions or whether it's bear or whatever, they'll tell you, don't ever show fear. Don't ever, like you said, don't ever run from them and
no
so
way.
Forth. If you stand your ground, you might scream and shout at them.
Right.
Worst
Make
case,
noise.
You throw something at them. It's like, that's kind of the way that we should react to our government, right?
right. I mean, we should be not yielding. That's for
that's right.
sure.
Yeah.
Stand
Don't
our
show
ground.
Weakness.
Don't
yeah.
show weakness. Stand our ground and recognize the government has been hijacked from us. It's time to take it back.
Mm-hmm.
And take it back in the way a democratic republic should. And mm-hmm. and we're doing that. We're seeing it right now. I mean, we're seeing it in the country. And I mean, from my perspective, the more you see in sort of the conflict rising, the more potential we have for a broader and bigger solution is mm-hmm. the way I see it, because mm-hmm. it's these points of tension mm-hmm. that cause people to reevaluate. And we're in that reevaluation as a nation. Mm-hmm. In fact, we're in that reevaluation as humanity across the planet, no matter where you go.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think we are at a juncture right now. As I've said many times, I don't know if you're familiar with the fourth turning. But they see a cycle in human history about every 70, 80 years.
Right.
I think the globalists understand that.
I think
that's why they picked 2030 as a time to push what they wanted to through in the name of climate change. Can you stay with us one more segment?
Absolutely.
All right, great. We're going to have one more segment with Nick Begich. And, of course, you can find him at earthpulse.com. And we do have his documentary, Earth Changes.
With the power of the First Amendment. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. We have one more segment with Nick Begich. And, of course, he's from Alaska. We've been talking about the earthquake. We talked about how the people there being more independent and self-reliant. They have to do that because of the isolation, because of the climate and so forth. Recovered very quickly from that. But I want to talk about something else, and that is, Nick, as we look at what is happening across the country, there's so many different ways that the federal government has intruded on our individual rights, on our privacy, and has invited us to become dependent upon it.
Right.
And how do we pull this back? And I think one of the best examples I can see is the situation with medical marijuana or with recreational marijuana. And you were telling me during the break that this was something that you guys handled very differently there. Here we have a situation where the government, I think, in violation of the Ninth and Tenth Amendment, because they had to pass a specific amendment to prohibit alcohol when they wanted to do that. So they all recognized that they didn't have the authority to do that without a constitutional amendment. But now we don't pay attention to the Constitution.
Right.
And you grew up and you were born in Alaska before it was a state.
Right.
And
right.
So you've seen a lot of changes there, but I think it is something that certainly the states have the authority to nullify this peacefully, which is
right.
what we're seeing now,
right.
with two-thirds of the states have nullified this federal overreach in a very peaceful way. I think
right.
that's the key issue.
And I think this is changing. Our congressional delegation, which is all Republican, Don Young, the longest-standing member of the U.S. House, he came in after my father disappeared, and Don Young is one of the sponsors, you know, to make this, to take it off the Schedule One, allow science to dictate. But in Alaska, we did it very differently. In Alaska, we have the strongest provision within our state constitution for personal privacy. So in the early 1970s, this issue was litigated as an issue of personal privacy, and it was determined by our state Supreme Court that possession of marijuana in the privacy of your home, up to, I believe it was 4 ounces at the time, was legal. Period. End of story. Mm-hmm. Because the sanctity of your home
yes.
was truly protected within our state constitution, the framers.
And there should be a sanctity of your body as well.
Right.
Because so many people use it for medical purposes.
Now, let's talk about that for just a second. You know, when Roe versus Wade was decided by the U.S. Supreme Court, determined that a woman's body was sovereign to her.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the PDR, the physician's desk reference that tells doctors what to do to us and what our insurance will cover and won't cover and what they're supposed to do to us, whether we like it or not? Now, this is an imposition that we ought to be able to cite Roe versus Wade in terms of immunizations or anything else going into our body, because the same principle in law applies. And I've never seen that challenge in the courts. So there's probably a time where it should be.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's the same basic principle. This is our body. We decide what happens to it, not somebody else.
That's right.
No different for men than it is for women.
That's right. And then you could, certainly they're not interested in our privacy in terms of our data or what we're thinking or.
No, and you know, let's go back to that for a second. You know, the privacy issue again, when we think about privacy in the framers' mindsets and the framers of our state constitution's mindsets, everyone thought about the home as a place where you stored all your valuable information and records and so forth, but that's not the case anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's your digital doorway that we need to protect today in the 21st century. The digital doorway is the gateway to our personal privacy, and this is what our Constitution provides for protecting and what our legislators have failed to defend. In fact, the deplatforming of this network is a prime example of the violation of what free speech is about and what the duty and responsibility of the press and media is about, because the freedom of the press was granted not to just say whatever you want, but as a fundamental way to inform the government, you and I, and everyone watching right now, to inform us and to invigorate the public debate so that we could have these kinds of discussions and not be deplatformed. You know, the way you
let's continue this, if you can say one more.
Absolutely.
Because I know you're going to be here in the studio all day. You're going to be on some of the other programs, but I want to continue what you're talking about here in terms of our data privacy, our personal papers, because they always like to pretend, oh, well, that was, you know, just for paper and quill. No, it's about our data. We'll be right back. Nick Begich, stay with us.
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. We have Nick Begich here in the studio with us, and we were just talking at the top of the hour in the last segment We got into privacy and how your home is sacrosanct. Under those principles, they had shut down the federal overreach in terms of marijuana in Alaska. And as Nick was talking about privacy, he said, you know, well, what about your privacy in your data, of course? And we see over and over again, the two things, Nick, that I see from people is like, well, you know, that doesn't apply anymore. Just like they talk about firearms. They say, well, you know, they had flintlocks. Now we've got more sophisticated rifles, so that doesn't apply. Well, that was back when they had paper and pen, but now we have computers, so it doesn't apply anymore. The principles are the same.
The principles
Human nature
are.
Is the same. And you've got a documentary at InfoWarsStore.com, Technology for the 21st Century, another one. We talked about Earth Changes before in terms of climate and other issues, but Technology for the 21st Century is one of your documentaries that we carry at InfoWarsStore.com. But this is very vital for us to understand the other thing that I see, which absolutely enrages me. So many conservatives, libertarians will say, well, you know, these people are just geniuses. They got a monopoly on the internet, and so now we have to do whatever they say. If they want to take away our free speech, that's fine. I don't agree with that. I think we create government so that we have our rights protected, and our right to be able to speak with each other is something that should be protected, and it is the public square.
That
Jack
is.
Dorsey has said it's a public square, and we've even had a Supreme Court decision, not the privacy issue of Roe v. Wade, but we had a Supreme Court decision that was exactly about this. 1946, Marsh versus Alabama. The Supreme Court said in a case where you had a company-owned town and they threw out a woman who was passing out religious literature, and they said, you can't do that. Even if you privately own the public square, you can't suppress free speech. It's still the public square.
That's right. And you know, it's such a different population today that doesn't mm-hmm. recognize how violated we all are every moment.
Yes.
In terms of how people literally rape our data and use it against us.
Yes.
I mean, as tough as that sounds, is because that is the fact of the matter. This is an assault on us. Mm-hmm. This is an invasion of our sovereignty as human beings. This is a violation of the very essence of who we are by taking our data and then using it to manipulate our behaviors.
And that's exactly what they're doing.
Exactly.
For some people that are well-known, some people who are dissidents, they do it very specifically, but they do it to all of us. You know, I got these stories that broke over the weekend about MK Ultra and so forth.
Right.
Well, we can look at that. We can see what an outrage that is, that somebody
right.
would experiment on you personally. But we don't realize that we're part of an experiment when they look at social media. They get a hive
right.
Mentality,
right.
and they measure their narrative, and if that narrative is working, they can fine-tune it because
right.
they can see what all of us collectively are thinking. So we're all part of this.
Right, and when you're talking about those releases on MKUltra, you mm-hmm. know, Secretary of Energy O'Leary during the Clinton administration, while she was serving in that position, said over 500,000 Americans have been victims of human experiments in the United States since the 1940s. Mm. This dealt with everything from chemicals to mm-hmm. the mind control experiments. But 500,000 Americans, now how many people have gone to jail for that?
Yeah.
Zero.
Zero.
Okay.
Maybe a whistleblower.
Yeah, a whistleblower is probably under the yeah. jail, you know, because yeah. they don't ever let those guys come
yeah.
up. But the fact is, 500,000 Americans, and then not to mention how many overseas where the reach of our courts doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
But the Canadians, they settled some of their lawsuits regarding the CIA abuses of their population. At I forget the university in Canada where this took place during the mind control experiments. They eventually settled with those folks, but not Americans.
Yeah. But when you look at social media, I personally believe that this whole thing is a mind control experiment.
It is.
When you look at the fastest growing part of the intelligence agencies, geospatial intelligence, they talk about mastering the human domain. How do they do that? Well, they infer what you're doing is it's your metadata, which is the key thing. And they come out and say, well, we're not listening to your phone conversations. It's just your metadata. That's the most vital part that's what they can use in their algorithms.
And they can predict
yeah.
with dead on accuracy what you're going to do better than you can when they gather enough data. And the data all of us has made available because mm-hmm. of the way we've engaged the electronic mm-hmm. World. And again, pushback is now necessary. It's important. And when you look at the Congress, and I was in this discussion with Alex last night a little bit, about the lack of scientific knowledge within the Congress and within the Senate to challenge mm-hmm. what's happening within the bureaucracy that they're charged with maintaining the regulation over.
Mm-hmm.
This is extremely important. Science determines which governments are powerful and strong. That's a reflection of you and I then.
Yeah.
So if our government is going to control and command this kind of technology and impose it on us and on the rest of the world in a way that violates the fundamentals of what we are as human beings, as laid down within our constitutional framers' documents, this fundamentally, every American should be outraged, should be outraged at the violations, and should be calling back. Contact congressmen. Take the time. Let them know we're watching. We're paying attention. We're not giving up. But put the press back on them to open the airwaves so this network and others like us can continue to speak to the public. If people don't like what we say, people do not have a right to not be offended. They do have a right to change the channel.
That's right.
And that's free speech.
Yeah.
Change the channel. You don't like what's being heard, but don't shut off my voice because I'll defend yours even if I disagree with it. Because that's what America is about. It's about being able to speak freely, have those debates where media is responsible to help us decide the shape of our government. Not the other way around. The way mass media is used now is to shape us to conform to a typeset that is so inhuman.
So much more sophisticated now. I mean, the early days of, you know, we go back and we look at the crude propaganda of the early days of the Cold War,
right?
Or Nazi propaganda. We can't get that because it's a different foreign language. But you know, we see the early American propaganda, very, very crude. And it's like, who do they think they're kidding, right? They've gotten so much more sophisticated. But they've been able to close the loop. You know, when they were doing broadcasts, they would just throw a narrative out there.
Right.
And they would hope that it was going to work. Now they can fine-tune that almost instantaneously because they have that feedback mechanism of social media.
Well, and even manipulating human behavior more directly through applied technologies through that media. Yeah, Putin's daughter, a story about her was just released, and she's involved in one of the big scientific institutions in Russia, and the one particularly in charge of this type of technology, the mind control or mind effects technology. Now, why would he put his daughter there? Because he needs somebody trusted there.
Yeah.
Because this is a technology, the most powerful technology on the planet. If you can influence what happens within someone's cranium in terms of their behaviors and their attitudes, this is a dangerous situation for the world.
Well, we look at, again, going back to the MK Ultra stuff, or going back to the documentary is just done by Errol Morris, Wormwood, talking about Frank Olson and so forth. Yeah, we go back and we look at these things. There's two things I do. First of all, that's ancient history. That was 50, 60 years ago. We don't do that type of thing anymore. No, it's far worse.
Worse now.
Yeah, far worse than that. And far more specific about what they're capable of doing. And they don't even try to hide it. You know, they're spending $200 million for the Brain Project or whatever.
Right.
And they don't even do it in a black budget, or they don't even try to keep it secret.
No.
They're in our face, and we're just, you know, oblivious to what's going on.
Well, you mentioned Frank Olson. And for those who don't know, he was a guy that was pushed out of a window and killed. He was involved in MKUltra programs. A lot of people don't remember that. But it was during the Ford administration, which was sort of the false presidency, you know, when you think about that sequence of events. But the people that were responsible for settling that was Rumsfeld.
Yes.
And his cohort, Cheney, when they were in the Ford administration. And when you want to talk about people still creeping through the system and showing up 50 years later, you know, here it is.
Oh, yeah.
And they knew what the technology was then because they wanted it suppressed, and they succeeded in suppressing it at that point. And they knew how it had developed in the interim, and they applied it. And they applied it in lots of different ways. I mean, when you think about, and we'll see it. You'll see it come out eventually. When they talk about some of the other interrogation techniques and things that they used around the world in some of these what was it, the kidnapping and transport program for torture we were running?
Yeah.
Again, is this who we are as Americans? The answer is absolutely not.
That's right.
A government that does this, these are felonies.
Yes.
These are all felonies that our government is conducting in our name around the world.
Except, you know, when you see John Kiriakou, I've interviewed many times. He's the one who goes to jail because he blew the whistle on those practices,
right?
Gina Haspel goes in and destroys the records, and she gets promoted to the head of the CIA.
Right.
This is the upside-down world in which we live.
Right.
When the Frank Church committee hearings exposed all this stuff, they came up with FISA. What they do? They perverted it to use it as a tool to spy on people.
Right.
This is, you know, this is so frustrating about this. It's great talking to you.
Good talking to you again.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. When I look at the headlines about Alexandria Occasional Cortex, All I can say is good grief. As I point out, she thinks that climate change politics is going to be the means to transform America into her socialist utopia. Well, with that idea, she is not alone. Macron thinks that's the case. The UN thinks that's the case. We're going to talk about what's going on at the COP24 meeting in Poland here in just a moment. But yeah, she does think that that is the way to do this. She said we can use the transition to 100% renewable energy as the vehicle to truly deliver and establish economic, social, and racial justice in the United States of America. Yes, climate change is about racial justice or whatever. Whatever you need. Just fill in the blank. It could be about national security. We've had the Pentagon out there saying, you know, climate change. Well, it's about national security. Or it can be about racial injustice. Or it can be, if they're honest, an excuse, a beard, a mask to establish their authoritarian, centrally controlled economic dreams, otherwise known as socialism. And, of course, she's been touting her so-called Green New Deal, trying to tie it to FDR. And as she's pushing this so often, her Green New Deal, there was the back and forth this weekend between her and Donald Trump Jr. The tweet that he put out, a caption of her saying, "Why are you so afraid of a socialist economy?" And then Donald Trump Jr. putting out, "Because Americans want to walk their dogs, not eat them." That got her triggered. She was very upset about that. She said, "I've noticed that Jr. here has a habit of posting nonsense about me whenever the Mueller investigation heats up. Please keep it coming, Jr. It's definitely a very, very large brain idea to troll a member of a body that will have subpoena power in a month." So here we are. Occasional Cortex is lecturing Donald Trump Jr. about a very, very large brain idea. And some people had something to say about that, thought that maybe that was worthy of an ethics investigation for trying to use her power to intimidate people. Folks, what she just did was to illustrate what socialism is really about. It's about using that political power over other people's lives to intimidate and to control them. And that's exactly what she's trying to do, even to the president's son. This is why we don't want socialism. Not only can they not make things work by passing laws, they have no idea how to make things work. Not only are they trying to create dependency, but they also wield it in the same way that Idi Amin did. Just give her some time. She'll get there. We see this happening in every socialist state. We have revelations coming out of Cuba about what they've been doing to their dissidents, that paradise of socialist health care that people like Ocasio-Cortez love to talk about. Cuba, no surprise how brutal they are, how they withhold food, water from the prisoners that they have, how they punish their prisoners in Cuba. Doing the same thing in Venezuela. So why are we so afraid of a socialist economy? Well, there's, let's see, Venezuela, Zimbabwe, Uganda, South Africa, Soviet Union, North Korea, East Germany. I could go on and on and on. Every authoritarian country, and of course there's no better way than to get authoritarian government than to promise socialism. We will take care of everything for you. You just turn everything over to us. We know better than you, and we will punish anybody who gets in our way, which is exactly what she resorts to against Donald Trump Jr. So Federalist co-founder Sean Davis tweets out, he says, "Are you threatening to use your power as a federal official to subpoena anyone who mocks or otherwise disagrees with you on the internet?" Well, of course, that's what socialism is, in its essence. It's worth noting that the official House Ethics Manual, as he goes on to say, explicitly prohibits the kind of threat that Occasional Cortex just issued against Don Trump Jr. for his refusal to support her political agenda. And he quotes the House rules. "Members are not to take or withhold any official action on the basis of campaign contributions or support of involved individuals or their partisan affiliations. Members are likewise prohibited from threatening punitive action on the basis of such consideration." So you don't like somebody politically? You're going to threaten them? Here we have Rand Paul jumping in. I'll play you a clip of that in just a moment, where it talks about how we are trending towards a banana republic. I would say we're already there. The difference between us and a banana republic is that we have nuclear weapons. But we have become as corrupt, as authoritarian, as disregarding of the rule of law and human rights as any banana republic, quite frankly. They're just better at hiding most of what they do because they control so much of the media and are working on controlling social media. But then, of course, she had something else to say over the weekend. She had an interview with a photographer who asks occasional Cortex, he says, well, happy birthday. She said, thank you. He says, well, you can't even run for president for another 6 years. She says, no, not for a long time. Although we've been joking that because of the Equal Rights Amendment hasn't been passed yet, the Constitution technically says he cannot run unless he's 35. So what we'll do is we'll force the Republican Party to pass the Equal Rights Amendment by threatening to run for president. And the photographer says, that's awesome. Awesome. All the people who say a literal interpretation of the Constitution is the only thing you should be paying attention to, we could use this against them. She said, exactly. All those constitutionalists, I'll keep vigilance. Oh, so they have some kind of a disdain for the Constitution. Maybe that's why they don't read it. Not just disobey it, but they don't even bother to read it because, as people everywhere are pointing out, Constitution doesn't say he cannot run. It says any person, any person. So there you go. So yeah, she says, well, I may not be 35, but that doesn't apply to me because I'm a woman. That's right. Because you are a woman, because she is Hispanic, because she's a woman, because check some other identity politics boxes, the laws don't apply to her, evidently. At least that's what she seems to think. And the photographer goes right on with her. We're going to keep those constitutionalists in line. Yeah, we'll show them. Our identity politics trumps the Constitution every single time, doesn't it? Seems like it does. We see, as we look at a couple of polls that have just recently come out with the Democrats, in case you hadn't realized just where they are on identity politics yet, a majority of Democrats support employers providing prayer space for Muslims, but less than half of them would do the same thing for Christians. Kind of interesting. This is a poll conducted by Grinnell College, and what they found was that 68% of Democrats say that Muslims should have a dedicated prayer space if they want it. But if Christians wanted the same thing, only 45% of Democrats would support it for the Christians. So 68% would support it for the Muslims, but only 45% for the Christians. A 23-point anti-Christian bias. So much for equality under the law, right? Which kind of explains why we see everything that's going on, President Trump. There's one standard for them and another standard for others. And some religions are more equal than others. Welcome to Animal Farm, 21st century version of it. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
The mainstream propaganda. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Today, the majority of nations decide to sign away their sovereignty. We have about 250 million people that are in flux. Not much less, actually, than the population of the United States, although we don't really know what the population of the United States is because we don't have any control over our border. Yet, we have 250 million people. We're told that it's going to become a hate crime, and that's how it's going to be used. They say, well, it's not legally binding. We have seen one agenda after the other come from the UN. The war on drugs is a UN agenda. Gun control is a UN agenda. Climate change is a UN agenda. And so is migration. It's going to be used by nations to enact laws. I mean, it was the UN that created the schedule of four different drugs in 1961 that Richard Nixon later signed into law using the same four schedules with all the drugs in those same four schedules. He called it his war on drugs, but it was a UN agenda. And so we know exactly how this is going to work. We've already had politicians throughout Europe and the Netherlands. Played for you the clip from a politician earlier in the show. He said this is going to be used to criminalize any dissent over migration policy. Anybody that dissents will be called xenophobic. It'll be called a hate crime that will shut down organizations, as we've already seen. InfoWars attacked and shut down on social media. Why? Oh, because of hate crimes. It's continually going on. So it's going to take the next level up. And that's what's going on now. The United States did not join it. Many other countries, Austria, even Australia, did not join it. But you got a lot of countries that did. Canada, Ireland, the UK, most European countries did join this. As this is going, as we were talking about this earlier with Nick Begich, in terms of the fraud of the Paris Climate Agreement, you could clearly see, regardless of what you thought about that, the issue at the core of it, regardless of whether you thought there was man-made climate change happening or not, you could see through that Paris Climate Agreement that it was a fraud because it let the largest, dirtiest producers continue to expand. China, India, they were going to be able to expand for another 12, 15 years without any controls whatsoever. The quantity of very dirty energy creation plants, and yet we were going to have ours immediately cut. So you could see that it wasn't about addressing global climate change at all. It was simply about redistributing political and economic power. And you can see the same thing in the migrant issue as well. Take a look at what's going on. We've got the UN is saying, well, you know, we're talking a little bit about it, but not doing anything about what's going on. In Nigeria, for example, Boko Haram, how they are targeting Christians, anybody that would stand in the way of ISIS. It's not just Christians. There'll be any religion, any people group that are there. Now, they're not doing anything to stop that. Those are real refugees, but they're not going to do anything for the Christian refugees. They said Christians are increasingly the targets of religiously motivated violence, and immediate action must be taken to ensure that their plight does not rise to the level of their fellow Christians who have suffered so greatly in Iraq and Syria, say some who are advocating for them. But again, the UN is not really concerned about that because the migration is not about real persecution. It's about changing and taking down the countries that stand in the way of global governance. The same thing that they were doing with climate, with Paris. You know, bring up China, bring up India, take down America and Western Europe. And so they're not concerned about people who are actually under attack. They're more concerned about redistributing the people so that you can essentially import the third world to make the first world the third world. And so when they talk about Iraq and Syria, that's not the only place, of course, where this is happening. It's also happening in Pakistan. We've talked many times about Asia Bibi. Absolutely no support for her from the United Nations or from the United Kingdom either. This is a woman who got a death sentence because she wanted a drink of water working in a field. The other women who were working in the field with her, the Muslims said, "You filthy Christian, you're not going to have any water out of that well unless you convert." "I'm not going to convert. I'm a Christian." Blasphemy. And give her the death sentence. And she was sitting on death row for 8 years. One member of parliament who said, "We shouldn't have this kind of death penalty against people." He was murdered by his bodyguard for saying that, talking about her particular case. And then when the Supreme Court said, "We're not going to execute her," there were riots all across Pakistan, like the ones we're seeing in France over the massive taxes, except there they were rioting over the fact that this one Christian woman was not going to be executed for blasphemy. And so, our allies in Pakistan and Saudi Arabia, we have poisoned the well, literally, for Christians, where we have intervened in Syria, in Iraq, in Afghanistan. Basically, the Christian minorities have been wiped out there. And they say it's estimated that in Nigeria, since May of 2011, Boko Haram, what is that? Haram means forbidden, right? What are they forbidding? For the most part, they're coming after women who are going to schools. Christians set up schools to educate young girls. They hate that. They kidnap the girls because education is haram. It is forbidden for girls. And yet, the West, who champions Islam, cannot find the outrage to do anything about this or to even help the people that are there. It's estimated that since May of 2011, Boko Haram has killed more than 37,500 people, displaced 2.5 million, created 228,000 refugees. Boko Haram has pledged allegiance to ISIS and utilizes its tactics of mass killing and kidnapping to instill fear and to intimidate. They target Christians and anyone else whom they see as a threat to the establishment of an Islamic state, says the letter advocating for them. So in response to that, you see some Western countries. Bulgaria is now part of Europe. They were under the thumb of the Soviet Union for a very long time. After they got independence, they established religious tolerance, which, of course, they did not have under Stalin. But now, because they're concerned about the influence of Islam and the hatred coming in with Islam, they have enacted some rules that, quite frankly, will take away religious freedom. So that's what we have to be careful of, that we don't become what we fight. Everyone understands that Islam does not support any kind of religious freedom. They don't support freedom for women, and they don't support freedom for anybody that disagrees with them. But this bill, people are concerned, would restrict religious freedom for anybody that is not part of the Orthodox Christian communities that are there. And that's one particular sect of Christianity. They said, indeed, financial support from all over Europe and the U.S. is essential for the daily life of churches, since it's been their only solution to recover from more than 40 years of communism. And so as we look at this, where does this all come together? Well, we have our socialists in America, people like Occasional Cortex, who shows her authoritarian socialism. You don't agree with me? I'm going to censor you. You push back against me? I'm going to investigate you and send you to jail. That's essentially what she did to the president's son, that kind of threat. And that's what we can always expect from those people. And so, as I was saying, we have 68% of Democrats. We look at how they would treat Muslims. Muslims get, if they want a prayer room from their employer, they get it. But only 68% Democrats say. But they would only 45% of Democrats would extend that same protection to Christians. And regardless of what you think, again, we're talking about, you know, climate change or whatever, look at the differential there. You know, regardless of what you think about prayer rooms and whether that's appropriate for employees to be doing at work or whatever, that 23-point difference that is there. They say 30% of Republicans said employees should provide a prayer space for Muslims. 40% said employers should support that for Christians. But the same poll, if you break it down not by party but by who voted for Trump, there's only a 3-point difference for Trump voters, but a 20-point skew towards Muslims for Hillary. Welcome back. I want to remind you that we now have going a very special sale, the 12 Days of Christmas at InfoWarsStore.com. Not only do we have discounts from 50 to 75% off of products, but we have free shipping store-wide. And we also have double Patriot points. That's our reward system for future discounts. And we have exclusive 24-hour specials like this one today. Bod-Ease turmeric formula is now 60% off. Again, that's only a 24-hour special. Each day we're putting out another special. And with any order, you get a free T-shirt. Today's T-shirt is We Are All Alex Jones, the anti-censorship shirt. So you can get a free T-shirt. You can get an exclusive 24-hour special, free shipping store-wide, double Patriot points, and up to 75% off as part of our 12 Days of Christmas sale. I had a interview with Nick Begich earlier in the program, and he was talking about a couple of different documentaries that he put together that we have on our site as well. You get those things, and you can get a free T-shirt with that as well, Earth Change and others. So we have a lot of different products, great gifts, things that are going to help you to prepare, help you with your health, things that you can initiate to people that you love, help them be more proactive in terms of taking care of their health. And of course, it helps us to keep free speech alive here at InfoWars as we have attacks against us with social media. And that's going to ramp up with the migrant treaty that was just pushed through by the UN for most of the countries in the world. They're going to be using that as justification to ramp up the hate speech laws. You don't agree with their policies for migration, for example, then you are hateful, you're racist, and you must be shut down. Not just on social media. That's going to be used by courts and other groups. They're saying, well, there's nothing at all that is binding on this. Well, that's always the case with all the UN agendas. But just take a look at how the UN 2030 agenda is being used now in the creation of smart cities. They create these goals, just like they did with the war on drugs, and we just go right down those agendas. So when we talk about the migration treaty that was just signed in Marrakesh, Morocco, we look at what Nancy Pelosi wants to do, for example. Right? It is immoral for us to have borders, according to Nancy Pelosi. As the Pueblos and Fronteras said, it's just a village without borders. No borders. That is what they're about. As she's advocating for this, she says, you know, undocumented immigrants work hard. They obey the laws. Well, no, they don't. It looks like they maybe obey the laws because you don't call them illegal aliens, because they are criminally trespassing and they are foreign citizens who are not here legally by definition. So they don't obey the laws. But the bigger agenda behind all of this is what's really going on with the UN. They are the ones who are ultimately behind it. The politicians like Merkel, like Macron, like Pelosi, they are just the quislings who sell this agenda at the local level. And when we look at Israel, for example, they were talking about this, but they backed out of the Marrakesh migrant signing at the last minute. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said, we have a duty to protect our borders against illegal infiltrators. That's what we've done, and that's what we will continue to do. Tucker Carlson talked a little bit about Nancy Pelosi and how she supported Israel protecting their borders, Israel having a wall, but not us, not America. Here's that clip with Tucker Carlson.
For myself, consider the wall immoral, ineffective. He also promised Mexico would pay for it. So even if they did, it's immoral still.
Now, if you're familiar with how things work in Washington, you may be wondering, when did morality begin to play such a central role in the legislative process? And the answer is the day that Nancy Pelosi got ordained. Pelosi is now an archbishop in the Church of Progressive Sanctimony. Her spiritual gift, hectoring. Listen to her preach.
What the president did was unconstitutional and indeed, in my view, immoral. It is a moral issue. This is a moral challenge. Immoral, unconstitutional, incompetent, short-sighted, and immoral. Our moral responsibility. We have a moral responsibility. Moral responsibility to the next
generation.
This
lady supports abortion.
It's just a reflection
paid for
of
by
the
government.
Weak moral authority.
Weak moral authority. That is not a problem for St. Nancy. Her moral authority is absolute. She is a good person. You, unfortunately, are not. So pay attention as she explains once again, a border wall is immoral. Well, fine. Far be it for us to question the command of an archbishop. We'll take her at her word. God hates walls. But wait, if walls are immoral, what about fences? Obama seemed to like them.
The bill before us will certainly do some good. It will authorize some badly needed funding for better fences and better security along our borders. And that should help stem some of the tide of illegal immigration in this country.
Better fences, says Obama. That sounds immoral. And what about Israel's security wall? It's big and real and very effective. Pelosi supported it, actually. She voted for a resolution defending that wall from UN condemnation.
Yeah, good fences make good neighbors, I guess we could say. You can call it a fence, just don't call it a wall, unless it's another country that's doing that. As Benjamin Netanyahu said, we have a duty to protect our country from illegal incursion and from invasion, from people massing at the border to come into our country. And we're going to do that, and we're not going to apologize for that. And President Trump shouldn't apologize for this either. He shouldn't be commandeered by some lower level federal judge because they don't have the authority. He does have the authority. I'm very big on supporting the 10th Amendment, the 9th and 10th Amendment. There are certain things that are not, most things, are not delegated to the federal government. And things like marijuana prohibition, that is clearly a usurpation of power by the federal government. But protecting the border is not a usurpation of power by the federal government. That has been delegated to them to do. President Trump has the power and he has the duty to protect the border. And it looks like it isn't going to happen. He waits for all of the judges to unanimously agree with him. If one judge somewhere doesn't agree with President Trump, then he won't do it, even though it is his power and his duty. There is a separation of power, and the judiciary cannot tell him what to do with that. Clearly, even when it is expressly given to him to protect the border. And so President Trump says, we're going to wait for the Mexicans to pay for it. Or I'm going to wait for Nancy and Chuck to pay for it. No, President Trump, you have the authority. You are commander in chief of the military. If you can invade other countries in the name of national security, you can protect this border. But it isn't going to happen. Because now we've had Congress planning to delay shutdown of the budget. They want to delay the border wall fight until the Friday before Christmas. Why? Because they're not going to do anything with it. You know, Paul Ryan said, I'm not going to be Speaker of the House. Well, he figured that he wasn't going to have the majority, but he was going to step down. But he was going to stay on, they said, as a lame duck. Well, I don't know how lame he was. I mean, certainly his agenda is lame. His agenda is a UN agenda. But he's been very active in terms of protecting the open border agenda that he has always supported. And he is going to keep the border open until he can hand off the gavel to Nancy Pelosi. And that's precisely what he's going to do. And so they're going to delay it to the Friday before Christmas. And you know they're not going to get anything done. So I put up on my Twitter account, Libertarian, I put up, 'twas the night before Christmas and all through the House. No spending was muttered from everyone's mouth. Migrants were huddled at borders, but who cares? Democrats' welfare checks will soon all be theirs. That's right. We're not going to do anything. Everything's going to be nice and quiet. Quiet as a mouse in the House. Because Nancy Pelosi says so. Because Paul Ryan says so. It is a UN agenda, and we need to understand where this thing is coming from. Now, Angela Merkel says that Trump has almost destroyed the New World Order. I wish that was true. Certainly. Single-handedly, he has been very disruptive of that agenda. He has challenged it openly. I think he's awakened a lot of people. In France, they understand what's going on with this. They understand the migration issue. They understand the economic oppression coming against them in the way of taxes and so forth. But I'm concerned that we have the UN Agenda 2030 coming in through the back door, and President Trump doesn't see it because it's coming in through the USMCA. That's exactly what is happening with it. So we look at these issues of free speech being destroyed by this multinational trade agreement. And, many ways that they can come after us, isn't it? And then come in through the back door through a trade agreement, and that's exactly what they're doing. Pushing all of the agendas that President Trump thinks that he's taking care of in Washington, they're putting them in the back door through the USMCA. That's it for our broadcast. Thanks for listening.